Welcome to Coaster Track, a UK theme park podcast in association with Scare Track. That's right, yes, another one of those theme park podcasts. However, please be advised that we have no censor. The language used may be of an explicit nature and is not intended for younger listeners or the easily offended. All views expressed are those of the individual host and do not necessarily reflect those of Coaster Track, Scare Track, our guests, or any of our associates. So, if you're still here, let's begin the show.
You're listening to Coaster Track, a UK theme park podcast.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Coaster Track podcast. My name is Mikey and today's episode is an interview episode with Austin Green from Thrill Nation. Thrill Nation, a fantastic website with loads of reviews all about attractions from here in the UK and Europe, whether it be theme parks, scream parks, escape rooms, and other kinds of attractions as well. Go over to their website now, check it out while you're listening to this podcast, www.thrillnation.net. Be sure to check it out and follow them on social media as well. So without any further ado, let's take you to the interview with myself and Austin.
You're listening to the Coaster Track podcast.
Hi guys and welcome back to this episode of the Coaster Track podcast. As I said in the intro, I am joined by Austin Green. Austin, how's it going?
Yes, all good, all good. How are you?
I'm not too bad, thank you, not too bad. First of all, thank you so much for coming on to the Coaster Track podcast. We're obviously going to be talking about scare stuff as well, but you, alongside Dean, run Thrill Nation. I'm sure a lot of our listeners have heard of Thrill Nation, and we'll talk more so about that later on. But I want to know more about you. Like, I'm guessing you're a theme park geek just like me.
Yeah, I guess a lot of people give me that title. I mean, I was more so... God knows how long, probably 8 to 10 years ago I was. I say I do more than I ever have done now, but I'd say I don't know all of the finer details or, like, you know, like the coaster types and types of fashion. I've kind of lost that element to it, but I still love going to all of these different places and you know, getting to ride all this, all the new stuff and seeing how everything works behind the scenes. Like, it's pretty incredible.
So you kind of enjoy them more for what they are, which is our, you know, visitor attractions, rather than counting the nuts and bolts nowadays.
Yeah, exactly that. I enjoy going to them, knowing about them, but not exactly knowing, you know, the top speed and all of the finer details.
Yeah, fair enough. Which is fair enough. I mean, we're all enthusiasts at the end of the day, whether you want to be an enthusiast that knows all the maths and physics or just an enthusiast that knows that they enjoy a bloody good ride on a coaster.
Exactly.
It's each to their own, isn't it?
Exactly so. And that's what I've, yeah, that's pretty much what I've done for the last, like, I guess you can say 10 years. It started off, you know, back when I joined, probably joined the Thought Park Mania forums and did meets and stuff that way and joined and got to know people that way, and then obviously to where I'm at now with a more finer group of friends and other people that you just meet out and about nowadays, I guess.
Yeah, of course. Well, you kind of answered my first question there, is sort of how you got into this sort of crazy world of theme parks and the three theme park enthusiast community. Mm. Was Thought Park your home park?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in a lovely place called Slough or Sloth. So I was always close by to Legoland, Chessington and Thought Park. So all three of them, I mean, Legoland being 20 minutes, Thought Park being 30 minutes and Chessington being 40-45 minutes, and it's pretty much same. I've moved since then to where I'm at now, and that's, you know, funny enough, same sort of story, no difference in timing to any of these places. But yeah, I probably started off back in school, like first trip to, you know, theme parks. I think the first trip I went to was at, oh, I went like Thought Park and Legoland as a real, you know, young child by my family, and I enjoyed it then as far as I can remember. But it's weird because when the first school trip I remember, it was at Chessington. I think it was like year six maybe, And I remember going on Rattlesnake at Chessington, and obviously, you know, you're meant to meet back at the coach at a certain point at the day, etc. And we got on Rattlesnake, and we had like 5 minutes left, and we were like, there was no one in the queue, so we stayed on and went again. And the ride broke down on the top of the lift hill. Obviously, it was like one of my first times at a theme park. I panicked. It was probably like really traumatic back then. And I think I really hated rides at that moment in time. And it was weird how it all flipped and changed to me liking theme parks as I do now.
Yeah, it's the same here. I used to be terrified of roller coasters. And then one day I just went on Nemesis. I was like, oh, wow, now I love them. It's weird. but yeah, that's got to be traumatic, you know, for a young boy who's supposed to be on the coach. I bet you got in a little bit of trouble with school as well, though.
Oh, yeah. We was over, I think we were up there for about 45 minutes. It was a fairly long period of time. We were stuck up there. And obviously, it was literally stuck in that, like, I don't know what the angle is, what, 45 degrees angle, yeah, like just on the verge of the top, just about just coming off the chain, and we just broke down. It was just really weird, and yeah, we're stuck at there 30, 45 minutes, delaying the coach, delaying getting home and stuff. But
it's a story to tell. Yeah. 20 years later, isn't it?
yeah, exactly. But yeah, it was good.
Awesome. So you obviously started with the more southern parts because that's where you're located. I'm quite jealous because I'm more of a Midland boy, so really, I have got Alton Towers and then Drayton Manor, but after that, not so much. So you're quite lucky to obviously be able to do the Thorpe Parks, the Chessingtons, and of course, Legolands. Was it a fair few years that you were doing sort of like the UK park, starting to get a love for it before you started venturing to Europe and elsewhere?
The first time I did a European park, believe it or not, was, I think, Christmas 2017.
Oh, crikey, so only a few years ago.
Yeah. So it was never really a thing for me. Just you know, there was so much work. Obviously, I worked in theme parks as well. Obviously, it was shortly after leaving college, and obviously I did that part of my life, and I didn't have a lot of spare time to go abroad. I never had a passport. I never went on like any holidays as a child, so that kind of thing wasn't really important to me. It wasn't an element I ever thought about. I was more happy just doing the parks I did with the friends I knew, and I enjoyed that part. But then I the first European park I did was Disneyland Paris. For Christmas, I went for actual Christmas. I spent Christmas Day there.
That was busy.
Christmas Day was busy, yes, but the 24th of December was absolutely empty. Oh, wow. It was the quietest day. I mean, I'm not even lying, the queues for everything were max 10 minutes.
Crikey, that surprises me.
Well, it's because their Christmas is on the 24th and ours is on the 25th, so the 25th is their Boxing Day, right. So I assume that's why they all flooded to obviously the park, and then on the 24th it's still open as normal, but I guess most of the French, you know, most of the French are busy celebrating. Yeah. So, the park, honestly, I was surprised because we only went for 3 days, and the 23rd was, I don't know, mediocre, I guess. The 24th was a surprise, to say the least, like so quiet. And then the 25th was a complete opposite. It was so, so busy. I think I maybe did one or two rides that day. And then because I've done everything else, I watched a few shows and, you know, had a look around more so on them days than anything. But yeah, that was my first trip, and then ever since then, it kind of got out of control. I've done, you know, around
loads.
I don't know.
You're gonna make me
10,
really jealous.
10 to 15 trips a year, maybe. Wow. So, it's got, yeah, I say gradually worse, but no, it's gradually got better over the years on how many I'm doing. I think 2018 I did 8 or 9, and then must have done about 12 or 13 last year, and I think I've got around about 15 this year at the minute plan, so it keeps growing.
Well,
but yeah,
you've either won the lottery or you can grab a bargain where you see a bargain. How do you manage to one fit it in around work? Obviously these places can get a little bit pricey. Are you just really good at booking.com or
it's a mixture of it all. So I mean, I can't really take any credit. Dean and people that know Dean personally will know that he's incredible with booking things, and he does, some people would say, double what I do. So you know, he's really good and has the experience of just knowing when to book things and where to look and how to get it all sorted. So, but it's just a mixture of just booking at the right time, knowing, you know, using the resources out there, if that's using other people's information or looking on Google between distances, what's nearby and stuff.
We use booking.com
a fair bit.
Really?
Yeah, it's just making sure everything works. And I mean, most of our trips are honestly weekend based. Saturday, we leave first thing Saturday morning and we come back Sunday night and we're back to work on Monday morning. We take no time off for most of these trips. I say, 75% of the trips are without any days off at work.
Just
so,
like a cheeky weekend away. I suppose it helps that you're, again, you're southern, so you're close to quite a handful of airports, yeah. I guess.
Yeah, Heathrow, Gatwick, Luton. We've never flown from Luton, or not me anyway. This year's the first we're flying from Luton. But yeah, it works that way. And we just book everything at the right time and it just ends up affordable. It's weird because people think like we have a lot of money and the thing is, yeah, I don't earn a lot of money. I don't have a great paying job, as people would say. So it's just just planning everything well. And obviously, you know, we work with a lot of theme parks we go with as well. So that's quite beneficial for us in that sense that we can, you know, that reduces some of the cost on trips. But yeah, we still pay for flights, transport, hotel, food and drink, all of that stuff we still pay for. But if you budget it right, like I said, I have to budget for every trip just to make sure I can, you know, afford the next. But yeah, it works out in the end. So it just somehow pieces together perfectly. And the, you know, obviously the more affordable one trip is, the more you can do
the next one. Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. Oh, fair play. And I guess booking in advance helps. Like you say, now we're only in February and you kind of got your year planned already, kind of ish.
Up until the end of September, because we didn't want to plan October before before February. Just, you know, I feel like it would be a little bit ridiculous to have your Halloween sorted at the start of the year. But yeah, we've got a year sorted pretty much, and we have an idea of what we want to do after October. But yeah, we've booked everything now up until the end of September, which is exciting,
yeah,
to say
definitely.
The least.
So. I suppose October stuff, and we'll touch on the scare stuff in a moment as well, but you know, a lot of places don't start announcing dates, times until the sort of August, September time anyway, do they? Some places are quite late.
Yes,
with it,
exactly.
So,
yeah, and with that, it's predicting, isn't it? It's predicting and using last year's calendars and stuff like that.
Some places close down, extra places open up. It's quite erratic,
exactly.
The Halloween period.
Yes, and you can't. You can make a plan now for sure. I'm sure people like me and you probably can. But if it was, if you compared your plan now until September, probably it'd be two different plans.
Oh, 100%, absolutely. Awesome. So I mean, you know, over only the last sort of 3 years, you've managed to get to quite a lot of places around Europe. Obviously, we've spoken at length with multiple people on podcasts or in forums or on Twitter about UK stuff. We all have our favourite coasters and we have our favourite parks and our home parks. But there is a bigger world out there. And I've only been to a handful of European parks, the likes of Europa Park, Fantasialand, Disney, Port Aventura. But are there any parks out there that you, obviously you haven't been to quite a few of them now, a few that you really do think that some of us here in the UK community should be getting out to? Is there something that we're really missing out on, or something that really just, you know, you think of this place and think that is a quality theme park? Is there anything out there that really ticks those boxes for you?
Yeah, I'd say there's a lot of places. You know, I've done the UK, I'd say, quite heavily, like growing up. So, you know, I love the places like Thorpe Park and stuff like that. Thorpe, Lego, Chessington. They were, like I said, them three places were somewhere I went all the time. And especially I worked for Legoland in Chessington as well, so I got to know them in even extra, more detail, spending most of my days there. So but going abroad, like, it's a whole different spectrum. It's all done slightly differently to how we do it here. Like, there's pros and cons, but you know, Germany's it's my favorite country. It ticked so many just tick lists for me. It was just an amazing park. I last year Fantasialand, I can't fault the place. So last year I bought a Fantasialand annual pass, and I went, I think I spent 5 or 6 days there in total last year. So I did 3 separate trips for 2 days each. So, and that was incredible. And yeah, that's probably a park I would definitely say, like, if you're looking to go to a park abroad, Fantasialand would be one, just for ease of travel, costing, and just the whole experience.
They also have some great deals on there as well. I mean, I think I went to, I don't normally stay at on-site hotels at certain places because they can be pretty pricey, but with Fantasialand I did an early bird deal and it included park tickets, and they did like a return for your second day free or half price. I can't remember exactly what it was now, but they do some quite good deals there, and they've got some awesome coasters, and Fly is due to open hopefully this year as well. So exciting stuff on Fantasialand.
Exactly. And I like I said, it's just I've been there now. I've probably been lucky to say I've been there 6-7 times, like 6-7 separate visits, and over different periods I've spent 2018 going into 2019, I spent New Year's Eve there for their New Year's Eve event. I've done their Christmas event multiple times. I've been there during the summer and stayed in, you know, the Ling Bao Hotel, which is their nicer hotel there. So I feel like I've done a bit of each of what they kind of have to offer, and it's really hard to really find a fault with it. It does just include pretty much everything you want.
Absolutely, and it's all quite compact as well. They fill quite a lot into a small space, so it's not like you need to, you know, do a lot of training with all the walking like you do with some bigger parks, because it is so you can get from one end of the park to the other within probably 5 or 6 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. So as soon as you've been maybe once, after you've probably spent a day there, you definitely don't need a map. Everything becomes very clear of where it is. I mean, Fantasialand compared to other parts as well, especially in the European, it's very diverse on how you can get around the park. There's so many different pathways and stuff where you can get places quicker, and if not, you'll get there eventually. But compared to other parks I've been abroad, where it's one path or no path, so it's good that they've thought that through. And like I said, the expansions that are, you know, coming out, like obviously Klugheim, which is obviously, you know, what they're doing, and Rookburg, and just nothing in the UK really compares.
No, definitely. And I found that, unfortunately, although I love going to a UK theme park, I'm not here to bash them, and like you say,
no, of course not.
Going to European parks, there's they do lots of things differently, and there are pros and cons to both. A big pro for Hannah will be that she can get beer absolutely anywhere in any European theme park.
Oh, is that a pro for me as well?
Exactly, exactly. She's, you know, you go to a stand, I get a Coke, she gets a beer. It's perfect. and then the likes of shows. Shows is a big thing, I find, that the British public just don't like shows, whereas you go to somewhere like Europa Park and you've got, like, 12, or, you know, you go to Fantasialand, you got shows there, or the Disney parks, you got shows. So everywhere else seems to have loads of shows. Are you a fan of visiting shows in theme parks?
So it's a weird one, because I would say, originally I would say no, but things have changed more and more recently. Like, I think when I first started going to all of these European parks, I was more interested in all of the rides, getting everything done, enjoying that element. Shows wasn't a big thing, and especially for me and Dean, it was just, you know, get that ride done, how many times can we do it, you know, make sure we get everything done multiple times, because we both don't know if we're ever going to come back, if it's that kind of place, if we can afford it, if it works for us. So that was the thing. But since we started repeating these places more, and we've decided that we've got more time, we're starting to slow down and enjoy the shows. And I agree, like, the UK really don't have a grasp on, I'd say don't really have a good grasp on shows, and a lot of people don't watch them. I mean, sadly for me, the last show I watched in the UK was, I think, at Chessington a year or two ago, and I watched a Gruffalo show there, and it was probably unfortunate, but it had several technical faults, and all it was a green screen in the background, and they couldn't get that to work, and that meant the whole dancers couldn't dance properly. And I was just like, it's a green screen. And you go, like, one of the last brilliant shows I watched was at Port Aventura, and I watched a stunt ice show, and they had triple the amount of people. They had dancing in multiple formats. They had a wide range of music. They had stunts. They had special effects of like a massive ship that, you know, blows up and everything. And I was just like, what's going on here? I was like, how is something like this being produced there, and we can't even do even half of that over in the UK? So shows are over in Europe. I'm starting to watch them more and more. And yeah, amazing. Like I there's so many of my so many favorite shows there, over just everywhere. Fantasialand, Disneyland, Port Ventura. Just as a few. But I've only watched one bad show abroad. So, and I've probably watched a good like 10 or 15
yeah.
now.
Yeah, go on, name and shame this bad show.
I think, bear with, it just wasn't for me. It was at Europa Park. So we watched, I don't even know what it was called. They advertised it as it was a Christmas show. We went at the start of January, first weekend of January. So it's still Christmas over there. So they still did wintry shows. And it was in one of the theatres there. And I can't remember exactly what it's called, but they had, they advertised a magician, juggling, singers and dancers. And for me, it was singers with a magician that performed twice in 30 minutes, which was, I mean, he, you could have taken the magician out and it would still have been the same show, just 3 minutes shorter. And it was just a singing show. And I was just like, I couldn't fault the singing. It was good. Everyone else enjoyed it, it seemed, but it was, I don't know, too slow tempo for me. It wasn't kind of, I wouldn't say it was like the younger generation style of show, but the people watched it, enjoyed it. I couldn't fault it for that sense, but it wasn't for me what, you know, we intended to go and watch a good show, and I feel like there could have been another show that would have been better to watch over there.
Yeah, definitely. I completely understand. And I'm a huge advocate for, I'm a fanboy for Europa Park. I really am. I've gone every year for like the last 8 years nearly now, I think.
Oh, wow.
And we always go for Horror Nights or, well, Tratica now. Yeah. So a huge fan, have an annual pass. And but even still, I fell asleep in one of their shows once because I was just watching it going, oh, my God, this is real. It was one that was very verbal, and it was obviously in German, and you can only read English subtitles for so long before you fall asleep. But that was fair enough. You know, and each to their own, I guess, as well. Like some people, like you say, might love that show, whereas other people don't enjoy it. But like we say, it is nice to be able to have a selection of shows.
Exactly. Not limited to, like, you know, like I said, that was one show. And like I said, I know that they do stunt shows. I know they've got, you know, that I've watched a horse show over there in the summer once.
And the ice shows, and that was, as well, quality ice shows.
Yeah, that's what I mean. There's so much. There's just, it means, like, obviously the one show I picked on that visit was unfortunately not to my cup of tea, but for someone else that could have been their favourite show. But like I said, it's great because, I mean, you go over here in the UK, you've got a choice of one, maybe two shows, and you're probably very not, you know, for the older audience, especially, I'd say for adults, there's not many shows targeted for adults over here in the
UK.
I
totally agree with that, 100%, definitely. Right, moving on to sort of our next topic, really, before we move on to obviously talking all about Thrill Nation. We've got to mention it. I think everyone's mentioned it in all the, I mean, a few years ago, I didn't think there was hardly any theme park podcast in the UK. Now there's loads. And we're all talking about, you know, top tens and favourite coasters and whatnot. But do you have a favourite park or a favourite coaster that just people talk to you about theme parks, you instantly think, boom, my favourite ride is this ride or my favourite park is this ride? Anything jumps to mind?
So yes and no. So I don't like to follow the crowd with anything I do. It's not my kind of style. I have very controversial opinions. I've done theme parks for a long time. I mean, my favourite ride here in the UK, and it has always been since it opened, again, very controversial, is the Swarm at Thorpe Park.
Quality coaster. I love the Swarm.
So some people do, some people don't. I've just, you know, I was there on opening day when it first opened. I really enjoy the atmosphere. I've ridden, you know, every seat. I've done it backwards. I'm pretty sure I was in the Sun newspaper one time on it when I was there for a photo shoot with Thought Park Mania. So it just has so many like good memories attached to it as well, I'd say. That kind of adds to the experience. But that's been my favorite ride ever since, still is now. But then go in a broad kind of style, like I've done rides like Taran. People say obviously like Taran's really good, and say it's good. I enjoy it more at night time during the winter than any other time of the day. But my favorite ride at current abroad would be Taiga at Lynn Mackey. I got very lucky to experience that, so which is it's a coaster. It had two launch sections, very similar to Taran, but it was it didn't have any dead sections. It wasn't a moment where you thought what's happening next. You were always enjoying every second. The park were very kind to offer us 30 minutes on it before the park opened itself. So we managed to get loads of photos. We got to film. We got to ride it about 6 or 7 times before the park opened. And probably one of the rarest things on them rides is to get a rollback, and we got a rollback. So that was weird. I've probably done like rides like Taran and Helix a fair few times and never had anything like that. And I've been quite lucky. I've never had many breakdowns. But Taiga, I think on the third or fourth ride, unexpected. Obviously, it's not even, the park's not even technically open, so it just hadn't warmed up. It was a cold day. Got to the second launch and it slowed down in the second launch section and not speeded up, and then it tried to speed itself up halfway through, but obviously didn't have enough momentum to get over the top. So but that was really cool. Like I said, it's such a good ride. I know it's other people that have been there have said it's their favorite, but I know a lot of people haven't been there because of its location and what other stuff is there as well, so it's not as well known, because I think a lot of people say more Taran's their favorite coaster abroad,
because I suppose Fantasialand is one of the easier parks to get to. It has lots on offer, it's that sort of thing, really, isn't it? It's also it's not quite the hype train, but it just seems to be the go-to place at the moment for UK enthusiasts.
Yeah, for sure. I've seen more and more people get there, and again, I think you find it quite hard to find someone that would not recommend the place.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I love the park. I visited for the first time last year. Absolutely loved it.
Right.
Plan on going again. Definitely, definitely. Awesome. Well, let's talk about Thrill Nation, because obviously that's what you run that with Dean. If anyone who, and I'm guessing anyone who does listen to this podcast is aware of you guys, if not your website with your reviews and what, they'll definitely know you, your social media accounts. But what exactly is Thrill Nation in a nutshell?
So in brief, we cover anything that you could class as thrilling, but not just thrilling as an adult, but we talk about family thrills, thrills that you can have with your friend, just the whole general concept. So obviously the main thing being theme parks, but you've obviously got escape rooms, mini golf, swimming, all of that, just Halloween events, anything that it's more like a day out. You can have a day out and have a good time and really enjoy, and there's some thrilling aspect to it. That's what we try and cover with
awesome.
It now.
And where did it sort of start? How was Thrill Nation born?
So I started it in 2012, originally with someone else. We both had our own separate pages at the time. I can't even remember what mine was called back then, but we agreed to come together very quickly and make a page, which I thought of the name Thrill Nation, and it's stuck ever since. Again, just trying to think outside of the box, trying to not copy the crowd at that time. There was a lot of like there is now, there's a lot of pages, so it was trying to stick out and be different. But our goal back then was different. We just covered theme parks, especially in the UK. So that's where we kind of started, and then it expanded. We went from me and my friend at the time, two of us. We turned to be four of us. I had help throughout the years from other friends, other YouTubers. Like we've worked with Chandler, who, if anyone that's watched theme park vlogs in the past will know Chandler. We've done some work with Kieran and Jack Silkstone back in the past, a fair few years ago. So we've worked with loads of people, but it kind of hit a point where the team weren't gelling. It wasn't going anywhere. I wanted to expand things, so I did. We had a massive refresh. They didn't want the refresh, so I took it over by myself, kind of as a restart, and that's where Dean got involved. And then ever since then, we've just pushed the idea of outside. Well, obviously, theme parks heavily involved in still, but pushed that other stuff in with it as well. And yeah, it's not gone bad ever since.
Fair play, awesome stuff. And now you've obviously got Dean Cox on board as well.
Yes, exactly. And obviously, massive help. And obviously, we're good friends, so like I said, every trip is pretty much me and him. And there's always, obviously there's still people that help us out every now and again. And obviously it's when you get to kind of the stage I'm at, and probably the stage you're at as well, you find it very difficult to run it by yourself. You can't run it as a one-man band.
Definitely it all adds up. People don't realize how much work can go into it. I mean, now there's probably more, in air quotes, content creators out there, whether it be written form, podcast, YouTube, you know, anything, or even just social media. But unfortunately, some people do think it's as easy as I'm going to set up an Instagram account that says I love roller coasters and already I'm a content creator. It's like, well, there's a little bit more to it than that. You don't want to look down your nose at anyone who wants to have a fan account or anything like that. I'm, you know, the more love the better. But then it is sometimes slightly frustrating when it's like, oh, I just spent 3 hours editing this podcast, or you just spent 4 hours writing that thing and trying to upload it with bad Wi-Fi in a dodgy hotel room. You know, it's all those things, you know, it's these sort of things. They're all fun, but it's warts and all, isn't it? It's and obviously Thrill Nation, it's predominantly all written form, isn't it? Like written reviews.
Yeah, so that's how we got about back in 2012, 2013, when, you know, it was, you know, hardly known. There wasn't many people, if anyone, that did what I did. There was a few big colossal, I'd say like colossal people that I guess fortunate for me don't really exist anymore, or not as big in the game as they used to be. But there was obviously people that did that, but apart from that, there was no one like in the middle. Like there's always like, I guess, categories of new people have been around and still growing, and then you've got obviously people that are well established. They're going places, that they've probably achieved what they want to achieve. It worked for me just doing reviews. That's how I got known. Some people, you know, I never reached the amount of people I wanted to, but it slowly grew. And it just went from there. And obviously we're now known for like some good photos. Obviously we're still known for our written reviews, which is really where I go. Like anywhere I speak to and stuff, they love our reviews, and that's how I keep it going, really. Like I said, I work with as many places as I can, because I can't, you know, we can't do everywhere, and we can't afford everything all the time. As I said, it's an expensive hobby. If you can work with a place, you know, push their stuff forward, and at the same time we get to enjoy ourselves, and obviously at the same time promote it to everyone and push that idea as well, then it just works. And that's the concept and idea we've gone forward with more and more. So we started off with Thought Park, were the first ever people to give us anything, and then we've just spiraled from there.
Perfect, awesome. And it's always good to hear that there's someone like yourselves doing growing and making it into, like you say, it's an expensive hobby, but it also turns into a job, but it's a job that you love. And it's good to see, similar to us, it's nice to have humble beginnings and then just have that progression, and it's just dedication and hard work over the years as well, isn't it? It's not just an overnight thing. You've got to work hard over the years to get where you are today, with, you know, a nice shiny website, a good following on social media. So, you know, hopefully it continues on into the future as well.
No, exactly. And like you said earlier on as well, it's just when, like I said, there's loads of people that create, you know, do what we do. And obviously they're just starting out, and a lot of people think they can do it for 6 months maybe and be the same level as where we are. But it's not as simple as that. Like I said, it is obviously, I think we could both say at the start, it's very simple that you do it in, you have where you would like to be, but you probably wouldn't think you'd get to that point. I mean I especially never thought I'd get to where I'm at now with it. I always thought that, hey, I'll give it a go. If it goes somewhere, it goes somewhere. If it doesn't, then I've enjoyed doing it whilst I've enjoyed doing it. But it went forward, it grown. And obviously, like now, it, like I said, hobby, part job kind of thing. It takes up a lot of time. Like I said, I spend most of my evenings always developing the website, writing a blog, emailing future places we're going to, working out what we can do for them and stuff like that. And obviously, all the planning and everything else.
Absolutely,
as well.
Yeah, there's a lot that goes into it. And even, you know, even social media platforms, there's not just Facebook to think about. There's Twitter, there's Instagram, there's Snapchat, if people have Snapchats, or, you know, TikTok is becoming a huge thing now.
Look,
I stay clear from TikTok. Hannah's got TikTok down for me. She's got 13,000 followers she's got on TikTok, and I've got about 30, so I'll just push everyone to hers. But yeah, it's that as well, isn't it? Obviously, it's not just the likes of... But I suppose social media is great because that's a way to share our content, so it's all a positive, really. Another positive is that you did loads of Halloween attractions last year, and I think this is a perfect place to sort of to conclude the discussion. You're saying to me off air that you did 20 attractions last year?
Yeah, 2019 Halloween, we did 20 Halloween attractions, the most we've obviously ever done. I mean, it's always been, you know, a thing. Like, we loved Halloween, and we always done bits and pieces everywhere every year, but never committed every weekend or every time. And this year we said this was the year to go big. And we dedicated most, I think, every Friday, Saturday and Sunday at a Halloween event. And then outside of that, we did some Thursdays. I think we did a Wednesday.
It's trying to find running what night, isn't it? That's the difficult part.
It's exactly, because the thing is, obviously, there's a lot of places that launch all at the same time, and especially the smaller events are all towards that end part, more closer to Halloween, and it's obviously working out where you can go, because these places, some of them are close to each other, some of them are miles apart, and it's working out what's enjoyable as well. Like, that was the main thing for Halloween for us as well, is yes, we want to cover all these places, yes, we want to work with these places, but at the same time we want to enjoy it whilst we're there, and not be like, oh, here we go, 6 hours drive here, 4 hours here. We want to make sure that it's still a good time, and it was. I couldn't fault it. Like I said, 20 events, our schedule worked, and best year yet.
Perfect, excellent. And there's some really, really good stuff out there. I mean, is there anything that really jumped out to you? Was there something that you, a park that you went to for the first time that you thought, crikey, why haven't I been here before? It's awesome. Or any particular scare mazes or attractions that really blew you away for 2019?
Yeah, so we obviously did so much, like I said, 20 events. The biggest shock of them all was we did a fair few abroad ones this year. I mean, the only other abroad one we did outside of 2019 was in 2018, where we did Traumatica at Europa Park for the first time. First Halloween abroad event ever for us. And that was incredible in 2018. Best event that one of the best events we've ever done. So obviously when we planned 2019 Halloween, that was heavily in the lineup of going back, but we also wanted to try a few new things. So we did, we did more than we ever planned for. We did, when we went to, Lynn and Mackie, where my favorite coaster is now, Tager, they had, when we went, they do their Halloween event in September, not October. So when we went at the start, I think it was like start or middle of September, they had their Halloween event on. So we didn't plan for it, but it happened. And you know what? That was really unique. It was weird. It was a mixture of like some really cool ideas and then some really poorly executed mazes. So like they you know, they as a funfair theme park as well, they use some of their rides and walkthroughs and added actors in, which, of course, clever idea, why not? They built another maze which had, let's just say you walk around in a lightsaber in a not-so-dim-lit black container, and there's a few zombies in there. That was by far one of the worst things I've ever done. But then they had, like, you know, going somewhere abroad as well and not knowing the language. Their attraction there, I can't remember exactly what it's called off the top of my head, but they had a main Halloween attraction there, and we got to do it as our group. There was only three of us that went. So, but they do a whole pre-show, and when we went through the first time, we was with another about five other Finnish people, and they obviously did it in Finnish, so we didn't understand it. You get the gist.
Yeah, of course.
Obviously, when we went back through the second time, it has interaction, and obviously we couldn't interact the first time, and the second time we hit a point with like, great, we can't interact because we don't know what you're saying. But he literally clicked his fingers and did the whole pre-show in English, which was like, oh my God, amazing. It had some insane costumes. I've never seen costumes like that anywhere I've been. And obviously I've done 20 places and that had some of the best costumes. But apart from that, my stand-up place was Wallaby. Fright Nights at Wallaby Holland.
I've heard some amazing things there. There's a guy who in Holland that runs a scare podcast as well. And he keeps telling me every time I speak to him, I've got to get there.
100%. If you haven't been, I would add it on the top of your list. Yeah. Like now, go this year, because I tell you what, we paid. That was one we paid fully to go out for, and we bought the fast track package for the mazes because we heard how busy it gets, and we thought, you know what, we're going once, we're gonna pay and do it properly. So we bought the fast track, and what's really, you probably can't even find this out through most things. I don't know. We missed it anyway when we were looking and planning it. So the fast track queue is you really don't queue. I think as soon as the fast track, it was a busy day. Like the queues were long, but the longest we ever waited was 5 minutes. So it, obviously really well planned operations. And the benefit of getting the fast track is you get a lanyard with a special, a piece of paper that's on top of the lanyard, a piece of card, that's what I'm after, with all the mazes. So they stamp it as you go through each one. But in the fast track queue, there's a actor that relates to that maze that does like a 30-second segment with you before you go through. But they don't have that in the main queue. In the main queue, it's just a normal staff member. But in the fast track queue, it's an actor relating to that maze. And I that was such a shock. Like, I literally was like, you didn't pick it up at first. I thought that they just, they just floated, but they were targeted only by fast track. So it meant that obviously you're paying to skip the line, but you're also paying for an additional experience before you got to go through the maze.
It's
just
it's adding value to that more premium ticket, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly that. And the whole thing was just incredible. Like, everything they had, we didn't even get to do everything. Because it can become very, very, you do everything properly, it comes, way into over the £100 mark if you want to do it. Like, we paid, I can't remember, about £60 or so, £50 for the fast track we did. But there was, like, obviously the alone experiences that you can buy for 20 quid or so, which sounds a lot, but I've heard a lot of good people say it's really good. That whole experience, and that's just obviously the mazes. They had like 8 scare zones as well, which, like, they all ranged in sizes. Some of them were like 20 footsteps big, and then some of them were like what we would class as the size of the Swarm Island, which was like you literally felt like you paid for an additional thing. And like, you could go there and just do Halloween and not do any rides. Like, that is incredible for a place to do, to fill up a place for that long for just Halloween things. Such a huge operations. And I'm looking to go back. I don't know how, but it was on the radar for this year, but we've sadly sadly not agreed to it yet, but things could change.
Things can change, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I tend to plan my, like I say, I'm a Europa Park fanboy, a Traumatica fanboy, so I'll always be there each and every year. It's trying to fit in those other parks around it. UK parks are quite easy, obviously, because we can get anywhere in the UK with my little Fiesta. But is there anywhere in the UK that sort of struck out to you last year? Any particular maze, an old maze, a new maze, a park? Is there anything that you thought was top quality for UK?
Yeah, so we obviously did a lot. There was obviously some great ones, some disappointing ones in the middle as well. I mean, some of my favourites were Fantasy Island with Fear Island. That I think it was their third year this year doing it, or in 2019, third year. We didn't ever do their first ever event, but we went in 2018. We thought it was okay for what they, you know, it was pretty incredible for what, I guess, a park like that could do on, I guess, not a high budget. It was really, it was good for what it was. And we said, 2019, we're going to go back. It was good for what it was. We want to see it. And they came out, I tell you what, they put some other parks to shame. Like, they fully went for it. The first maze we did there, obviously you have an expectation for a place. Like when you've been there before as well, you kind of understand what you're going to probably experience. You have a understanding. That first maze, we walked out shaking. Like, that's how not prepared we were. We literally came out and it was incredible, because we did the same. They have, obviously, they reuse buildings, and the maze that was in there the previous year was a carnival themed maze. I think it was called Carnival or something similar. And it was, you know, it had many flaws. It was one of their weaker mazes in 2018. And then in 2019, they came back with a new theme. And it was sinister. It was highly themed. It had a storyline. Every room was frightening. You literally couldn't fault it in the slightest. And that followed throughout the whole event. Every single maze was not what I expected. It was something completely else. And for an event like that, I guess, obviously it's a theme park in Skegness. It's not hugely popular, I'd say, in terms of enthusiasts and people going there. But I mean, yeah, for what happened, like I said, like how it's been from the first year we did it to last year, like I'm so excited this year for it. And like it becomes like a must part. There's places that you go and it's like, yeah, maybe, like, oh, it's gone downhill. And obviously, like I said, we do so much, like me and you, and you have to consider, where do you go? Some years you have to cut things out, some years you change it up and do new things, and sometimes things have to hit the chopping board.
Absolutely. So there's always, and you have that select list where you're like, no matter what we do, we have to go to this place.
Exactly. And a place like that, which is far, I mean, it's far for me, it's a good 3-hour drive from mine, and I tell you what, it's worth it. 100%, it's worth the drive. It's you know, the theme park is pretty good as it is anyway. It's a cheap place. It's up north in the northeast, so it's pretty cheap for what it is anyway. But the Halloween event is, I just can't talk highly enough about it. It just, I mean, everything I did, like, that was my favourite place in 2019 by far, in the UK at least. There's obviously other places that which were good, but that just steals it.
Quality, fair play. I think that's a fantastic note to end this little interview on, really. I mean, it's great to see that there's some improvement there as well. I went to Fear Island for their first year, 2017. I'm guessing it was 17, and they only had the two attractions, which were decent, you know, but again, you don't know what to anticipate. It's a new park. It was, again, exactly, relatively cheap. I know they do work with Atmosphere Scare Entertainment, who are the people who create Scare Kingdom every year. So I kind of knew the kind of attractions that they potentially will create. But yeah, it's great to see that they've improved the event so much in only a short space of time. So, yeah, definitely need to get that on the list for 2020. And everyone else listening as well, get up there.
100%. If you've never been, like, you're missing out. And like I said, if you need a time to go more than other for the drive and everything else, go for Halloween, just because, like I said, it's the standard park. Nothing closes additional to that. I mean, obviously some rides have to close due to the dusk, like any other theme park does. But the Halloween event additional to that, and they have, you know, a show, they have a circus show in there as well. It's just, it all just flows, and it'll be some of the scariest stuff you've done, and you go in small groups, which is the key thing.
Yes, with definitely.
The bigger fence now.
The smaller the groups, the better.
Exactly.
Definitely. Awesome. I really appreciate you coming on to Coaster Track, obviously with a little bit of Scare Track dipped in there as well, Austin. How can people, if they're not already checking out your website or following you or liking you on social media, what are all the socials and the website for Thrill Nation?
Yes. So easiest way is just always just Google Thrill Nation, or just put Thrill Nation into any social media. Main things being Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The website's thrillnation.net. All is just one word. But yeah, it's pretty easy to find, apart from the odd duplication, as we mentioned. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, apart from that, I mean, we're normally right on the top of the list. So yeah, you should just find us.
Yeah, absolutely. You can't miss you. You got a nice logo as well. So, and the logo's on all of your social media, so it's all,
exactly, it's
you can't miss you. Absolutely excellent. Well, I mean, thank you very, very much for coming on, Austin. What's next on your list in the world of Thrill Nation?
We've got a mixture of plans. I think the next one we have is not so thrilling for us, but I think we're going to go do the Legoland Bricktacular Week. Okay. In next weekend. We've got stuff like Denmark coming up in April. We've got two trips in Germany in May. So this is like my little break now, but if you keep checking on us, like, yeah, we're going to at least one or two abroad places every month from basically April onwards.
Wow, nice. So guys, if you want to keep up to date with everything within the theme park / attraction community here in the UK and Europe, Thrill Nation is the place to check out. Austin, thank you very, very much for coming onto the podcast, and I hope to bump into you soon.
Yes, speak soon.
You're listening to the Coaster Track Podcast.
So there we go, guys. A huge thank you to Austin for coming on to the Coaster Track Podcast. Sincerely do appreciate it. And guys, make sure you are following, liking, sharing, subscribing, absolutely everything to Thrill Nation. A fantastic website, www.thrillnation.net. Some really good informative reviews on there. Not just about theme parks, but about extra stuff as well. Screen parks, escape rooms. They're doing some crazy golf. They're doing loads of different things. They've been skiing. They do loads and loads of stuff. I'm very jealous of them, but make sure you're going to check out their content, because they're great guys and they put a lot of effort into what they do. But yeah, thank you to Austin for coming on to the Coaster Track Podcast and talking about scare stuff as well. Speaking about scare stuff, our next episode will be a Scare Track episode, and we will be talking to Mark Lofthouse, who's working behind the scenes on a very top secret brand new scare attraction. Screenfields are coming very, very soon. All the information is going to be released on the 14th of February. That's right, Valentine's Day, where our episode will be out as well. Scare Tour, our friends over there, are going to be releasing, I think, all the exclusives, but we will have the interview with Mark, who's working very closely with this brand new park. So do not miss out on that next episode. We'll also be visiting Scare Kingdom Scream Park for their Valenterra event, where we'll have an on-location review episode. Then it's back over to Coaster Track for our on-location Blackpool Pleasure Beach antics. That can be, you know what, I don't even know what we're doing yet, whether we're doing a vlog, whether we're doing a podcast, whether it's just going to be social media craziness. Go make sure you're checking us out. Go over to our social media pages, guys. Like, follow, rate, subscribe, all that stuff on Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, and Instagram. Just search for Scare Track and you'll be able to find us on there. If you're going to Blackpool Pleasure Beach on the opening weekend, unfortunately, we can't get there till the Saturday night, but we will see you in the Velvet Coaster if you're going to be there on the Saturday night, and then on to Pop World, of course. It'll be our first time we get to join you guys for the opening weekend at Blackpool Pleasure Beach. So show us how it's done. We're old now, so we'll probably be in bed for nine. No, I'm joking. Once again, you can join us over on our social media, and you can check out everything on our new website, www.scaretrack.co.uk, where you can hear all the podcasts from Scaretrack and Coastertrack. You can check out our scare cams, our Coastertrack vlogs. Our new movie reviews are over on our YouTube channel as well, youtube.com/scaretrack. But like I say, our website, you can get absolutely everything, including our Patreon details and our merchandise sales as well. Once again, thank you to Austin for coming on this episode of Coaster Track. Thank you to you guys for listening. As always, we sincerely do appreciate it, and we'll see you next time. Bye, guys.